You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to The Wire. As you know, we have a semi-regular European segment, which has been most recently dedicated to developments on Brexit. Well, today we're doing something a little bit different. We are talking to our BFM correspondent, Connor Nell. He's in Northern Ireland in the city of Londonderry, or just Derry, if that's how you know it. If that name's familiar to you, it's probably because there's been quite a lot of turmoil there in the last wee while. Or it's because of the Netflix show. Firstly, in April, there was the killing of journalist Lera McKee, but there's also been riots and political instability throughout the whole country. Connor is an expert on all of this, as opposed to myself, who really knows very little. It's been interesting seeing there hasn't been a lot of news about this in New Zealand, I feel, compared to something like Brexit, which just gets completely covered the whole time. So I spoke to Connor this morning to get a little bit more information about what's been going on and asked him to run me through the developments in Northern Ireland over the past few weeks.
The really short version is that the Republic of Ireland, mostly Catholic nationalists, wanted to leave the United Kingdom, Northern Protestants fearing they would be in a minority, especially considering that they were the working class as well within Northern Ireland, wanted to stay with the United Kingdom, fearing the safety of their own religion, their own nationality and their own allegiances under the Irish Republic. That basically meant the island of Ireland was partitioned, leaving the unionists in a majority, who are mostly Protestants, in the northern six counties, and nationalists, Catholics, as a significant minority within those six counties. The way politics works, if I give the basic rundown, because it seems very complicated on the outset, but it's actually not. The political parties are basically divided as the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, Ian Paisley, that's his party. They are hardcore unionists. They are in the majority at the moment. Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, they are the hardcore nationalists. Political wing of the Provisional IRA. They are the largest nationalist party. And then in the moderate wing, you've got the Ulster Unionists, who used to run the place and now don't, and the SDLP, who were founded by the Northern Irish Civil Rights Association. And then you've got non-sectarian parties like Alliance for the Greens and etc. in the middle, essentially.
So there's a lot of different parties involved.
Yes, all representing essentially the split between Protestant Unionists and Catholic nationalist. And you've got to understand, Northern Ireland is a post-conflict society. There was peace in 1998, but the peace is very delicate, and there is still a security risk here, make no mistake. Some of the listeners may have heard of the killing of that journalist, Lera McKee, in Londonderry, where I am, or Derry, depending on your political persuasion. And that's kind of been one of those events that's been a bit of a shot in the arm for Northern Ireland. Because what it's meant is that the DUP, since the local elections on Thursday, are now in a minority with seats, which doesn't necessarily mean that unionists are in a minority. It's just most unionists voted for the non-sectarian party, Alliance. It's meant that the DUP and Sinn Féin only yesterday came to bilateral talks, which will hopefully end the two-year government shutdown in Northern Ireland as a result of the failure of the power-sharing agreement. And the United Kingdom and the Irish governments have just had bilateral talks at Stormont, where they've agreed safeguards for Irish citizens within Northern Ireland as well. So for those people who are staunchly Irish and who don't want to be British citizens, they have that guarantee there now between the British government and the Irish government that whatever happens with Brexit, they will be able to keep their right to access welfare, their right to access schools, their right to access healthcare, all the rights enjoyed by British citizens within Northern Ireland.
When I found out that you were going to be over there and able to speak with us, you said that normally these elections are pretty dull, but this time it is quite a significant election that you happen to be over there for.
Well, essentially, it's not the electing MLAs or members of the Legislative Assembly to power, but it really is a bit of a canary in the coal mine for what Northern Irish politics is going to look like from now on, because the thing about this journalist who was killed is that it was very significant that it was her who ended up that way, because she was a campaigner for LGBT rights in Northern Ireland, where there is no gay marriage. She was a active cross-community worker. She grew up in one of the most Catholic neighbourhoods of Belfast, so she was under the old laws of the Troubles. She was shot by her own kind. So seeing someone like that, who's really the face of the new Northern Ireland of building cross-community links and trying to put the old divides behind really disturbed quite a lot of people. And so that's why the DUP and Sinn Féin, who are the two parties at each other's throats and who failed to bring government to Northern Ireland, that's why they lost votes the other day, because people were sick and tired of the same old sectarian divisions there. So it's been quite monumental, to be honest.
And I want to talk very briefly again about that, the journalist that was killed, Lera McKee. That was probably about 3 weeks ago now, and I believe it was the first time that a journalist had been killed in the area or in the region for something since about 2001 or some 2002, something like that. I mean, it must have had quite a big effect on the public in general.
Oh, absolutely. Like, what was the most significant moment of that whole reaction to that killing was the... So Saru, who are the political wing of the new IRA, the people who were standing up for Lera McKee, went up to Saru's building. And you imagine this is a building that has gunmen on the side in murals, says unfinished revolution on the side. It's got, you know, monuments to hunger strikers, usual hardcore nationalist stuff. And these are people who don't recognize the Good Friday Agreement. They see it as a sellout, and they want to carry on the armed campaign against the United Kingdom. These people who were supporters of Lera went up with red paint and they put handprints on the side of the building, blood red hands, to say, these gunmen were your men, this was your fight, this was your bullet, you have killed this journalist, the blood is on your hands. And this was a cross-community thing. These were Protestants and Catholics who were coming out to put their hands on that building. There were marches out there, the Easter Rising March that usually goes on by Saru, where they dress up as IRA and pretend to be soldiers down the street. That was banned in Londonderry this time. There's been a real outrage towards it. And to be honest, one of the great quotes that came from Father Martin McGill in Belfast during Lera's funeral was, he said to all the politicians in there, the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach from Ireland, and both the DUP and Sinn Féin, said, why in God's name does it take a young, innocent journalist like her to somehow make politics work in this country? And unfortunately, the reality is that's the way it goes. It takes a lot for people to see past their own bigotry.
Well, hopefully it will remain. I mean, it should become an important turning point, we hope, an event like this.
Well, you think back through all the events. Listeners will remember the 1987 Enniskillen bombing. I mean, that was one of those events we all thought would change everything. And the Omagh bombing in 98, we all thought would change everything. And it did change some things. It led to incremental change. Enniskillen in particular led to the ceasefire and the Good Friday Agreement. And Omagh solidified the Good Friday Agreement. But it is always incremental. It's never going to be at peace overnight. John Hume and Eamon McCann, who are probably the two most middle ground civil rights activists in Northern Ireland, they said that this is a process. It's not an overnight process. This is going to take generations of people to come together and finally get to a point where Catholic and Protestant kids can walk down the street to school holding hands together without fearing their own safety. And to be brutally honest, you'll always have a divided Ireland when you have a divided Northern Ireland.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.